Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I am your host, Lotta Dad, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the community manager and content creator here at Living Sober. And today I am joined, this is very exciting, by Susie Morrison. Now, Susie is a peer advocate. She is an addiction specialist. She is an educator. She is a mother. She is a grandmother. She is my friend, and she is sober. Welcome, Susie.
Oh, thanks, Lotta.
It's so nice to have you here. Thank you. Now, full disclosure, Susie and I know each other very well. Susie is my mentor and supervisor with some of the jobs that I do, and we've grown very close over the years. How long have we known each other for now, Susie?
I was going to say 5, 6, 7 years. When did Living Sober start?
We launched in 2014, August.
Right, so it wasn't that long after that, right, I don't think.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we used to sit and have a coffee and then slowly, I just gained so much wisdom and knowledge and support from you, and the Living Sober members might not realise, you know, what a role you play behind the scenes. You have actually also written a number of pieces for us, and I'll link to those in the blog post. But for people who haven't perhaps read these, could you just tell us a little bit about your story and what led you into recovery, Susie, and how long ago was that now?
I'll lead with that last one. So I celebrated 35 years of recovery on the 14th of February, Valentine's Day. I know. Amazing. I didn't know at the time I didn't know it was the 14th of February because things were very blurry back in those days. But when I tracked back on my first day sober, I realised and I thought, what a wonderful gift of love. Mm. So every year I get to celebrate that, which is amazing, and something that I really thought, oh, I feel emotional too, I really thought wasn't possible. I had resigned myself to the fact that I was going to be the person who drank for the rest of her life because I couldn't see a way out at the time. A little bit about myself. What can I tell you? In what sort of way? Tell me what you want.
Well, what was happening in those last years that led you into recovery? I mean, how was your life, and what was it like when you had to make that pivot into sobriety?
Well, it was awful, really. And you know about the secret stuff, right? You know, all that trouble we go to get enough of whatever we need to get through the day secretly, mostly, and then on the inside, still feeling the shame and fear and the isolation and guilt and all of those sort of things, because I didn't know that alcohol, you know, alcohol being a drug, I didn't know that it stopped working. I didn't know that. And what was happening for me in that last 3 years, I didn't have... I say the last 3 years because the last 3 years were the toughest, I think, for me to get through, because every morning I didn't have any actual suicidal ideation as thinking about ways to end my life. But every morning for that last 3 years, I woke up, as soon as I woke up and I realised I was awake again, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to have to get through another day. And that's how my day started, you know, with that awful sinking feeling in my heart.
And it's that inside stuff that is so crippling. And I was talking to someone about this yesterday. You know, you can see on the outside people who are struggling and you think you know what it's like, but it's that chipping away at your feelings of yourself and the world on the inside that is the worst, isn't it?
Oh, it's horrible. And the thing is, I had no one to talk to about it. And I was in a relationship, long-term relationship, 2 children, and my partner was really anti-alcohol. I mean, we were using other substances as well, and alcohol was considered not to be cool. And so I was able to sort of...
The hierarchy of substances.
I know. I know, it's so mad, isn't it? Anyway, so it was these strategies, right? Like all the inside stuff, like constantly feeling like I was going to be found out. And I don't just mean found out about the drinking. I just mean like found out that I was such a mess on the inside, because I was working at the time. I had two kids. I had a relationship. I really wanted to be the mum that fronted up at the PTA meetings and, you know, had dinner on the table at 6 o'clock every night, and to be the friend and the partner and all that kind of thing. And I couldn't do it without substances. I couldn't do that without drinking every day. And so it was like I was able to openly drink about, I don't know, maybe it was a bottle of wine, although there would be comments. And my partner, even though he wasn't that much into alcohol, he would have a couple of glasses as a way of moderating my use. But of course, I was drinking more than that.
Why and is it so, sorry, I was just going to say, when you say that you were in a relationship, you had people around you, you were in a job and you had no one to talk to. I mean, I was similar. Why is it that we feel so lonely and isolated when we are surrounded by people? Why do we hold it so tight?
Well, I know for me, I had a lot of shame around it. I had so much shame around it. I just wanted to be able to drink like other people do. I wanted to be the person who could pour a glass of wine and have a glass of wine and then carry on. I didn't want to be the person who went to pour the glass of wine, filled one up, knocked it back, and then walked casually back into the room with the other one, you know, making it look like that's the one I'd had. And I was so ashamed that I couldn't control it. I tried everything. I tried different, you know, I stopped drinking brandy and started drinking wine, or I, you know, sort of moving things around. And the blackouts, you see, I was deeply ashamed. I had blackouts. I had a lot of blackouts. And
I never had a blackout.
Yeah. Oh, it's awful, because I never ever told anyone until I got into recovery that I did have blackouts. And it's like piecing together the next day just through sort of signals, you know, how was my behaviour the night before, because it's completely gone. And, you know, the hope was that I was behaving well, but who knows? Yeah. And then living with that, I thought if people knew how much trouble I was in with alcohol, that it would be taken away from me somehow. And I really did think it was my lifeline.
Yeah, so there's so much going on. Blackouts, just quickly, I didn't really realise until I read a book actually called Blackout by a woman called Sarah Heppeler. It's a really good book. You know what they were? I'd had brownouts, I suppose you could call them, where my memory was a bit blurry and I'd be looking at the, you know, the bank statement to see where I spent my money. But I'd never had those nights where, you know, when you're in a blackout, you're operating, you're talking, you're walking, you're having sex, whatever, but your brain has literally stopped storing those memories. So outwardly you're not in a coma. You're still moving around doing things, but your brain, there is literally no memory being stored. So they are terrifying, from what I understand.
They are terrifying. And, you know, Lotta, I had my first blackout when I was 18. And I didn't stop drinking till I was 39. And I didn't always black out, but I had a lot of them throughout the years. And I was thinking about it the other day, because it's been my anniversary week, and reflecting back and and I remembered, you know, that very first blackout, and it was terrifying. And I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know how to find out what it was, who to ask, and I just kept it to myself.
Mm. So when, I know it was 35 years ago now, but can you remember, you know, what the kind of key things that you sort of had to work on when you entered into recovery, the kind of habit changes or self-care? I mean, I know a lot goes on. Gosh, even in my 10 years, so much has happened in terms of my life and myself and all of it. But what were the key sort of things for you that you really had to work on and change after you got sober?
It's interesting, that stuff, you know, like the first 18 months I've been working in addiction for years, and I've found out a lot now, but of course I didn't know anything at all then. But the most accelerated period of growth takes place in the first 18 months, when people put down the alcohol and start making some changes. And then, you know, quite quickly again for the next 5 years, and I mean 4 or 5 years. And well, one of the things that I did, and you don't hear it talked about, but I was so scared that I was going to pick up alcohol again, that I, as an extra addition to my making a decision just for today, because what I did for me is I went into a 12-step program for people who are recovering, because I couldn't do this on my own. I didn't go willingly, by the way. And but I was sitting in this room. I was in a treatment center. I went to a treatment center. What happened for me there when I was being assessed, I was still so ashamed. You'd think, right, I'd be talking about it all there. I was getting assessed, and I kept the amount of alcohol I was drinking. Well, the other side of it is too, I didn't really know how much I was drinking because of the secrecy. How can you keep track? But anyway, I didn't, I wasn't forthcoming with that. And consequently, 3 days later, I woke up, you know, in my bed surrounded by the health professionals. I'd had a massive seizure in the grounds. And this was in Queen Mary Hospital, yeah, in Hanmer Springs. Now, I didn't know about withdrawals from alcohol. That was the first time I knew about them, was when I came to and they explained it to me. And from that moment on, I just disclosed everything, yeah, because that gave me such a fright. And because alcohol being so easily available and, well, I don't know what it's like in Wellington, but I can just go up to the local supermarket here and it's in the aisle by the health food.
Oh, yes, it's next to the pesto and hummus in my
supermarket. Yeah, right. So I'm going down that aisle. But what I did is I took disulfiram for every day for a year, which is called Antabuse is its name. Yeah. And it's this, I did that and I felt really good about that because I had some little rituals, you know, replacing the morning rituals of my, when I was drinking and using other drugs. So a daily reading, and I would take the disulfiram and thought, okay, I know, just for today, no matter what happens, I'm not going to pick up a drink. So that took the pressure off me, and it was like an insurance policy, really, and it worked really well for me. I took that every day for a year, and then I felt like, well, you know, I'd learned a whole bunch of other tools by then, like you say, about how to learn, how to live well, because I didn't want to just be abstinent. I wanted to have a recovery, and you know, and you've heard me say this, there's a really big difference between abstinence and recovery, right? Abstinence is an event and recovery is a process of growth and change and, you know, fulfilling potential of who, you know, I could be, all that kind of stuff. So I started going to regular 12-step meetings and meeting like-minded people. I found my tribe.
Yeah.
And I began, and the thing that really got my attention prior to that, and I see this happening on Living Sober, which is so beautiful. You know, that secret stuff, all that inside stuff, and they made us go to 12-step meetings in treatment, and I was like, oh, for God's sake. But anyway, I heard people talking about that inside stuff. They were talking about the fear, the isolation, the shame and the guilt and the loneliness, because it's very lonely being that person who's trying to make it look all okay on the outside.
It's exhausting.
And feeling absolutely exhausting. And I heard people talking about that, and some of those people hadn't had a drink for weeks or months, and a couple of people, staff members, hadn't for years. And I got this little, the hope, I didn't know I had any left, maybe I didn't, maybe they had the hope, and anyway, a little flame was fanned, and I started thinking, oh, maybe if they can, maybe I can. And then what happened? Oh, what else happened was when I was there, I had this realization as I learned a bit more about addiction and how it works, and you know, it's not what we take, it's where it takes us, and that, you know, my experience was an experience of common humanity with every person who was there. So I was with a group of people for the first time who were talking about the inside stuff, and I thought, I'm not alone. If they can do it, maybe I can do it. And for me, I realised it's easier for me to have none than one. So that's how I started out, and that's why I decided to go to a 12-step program, and that's why I just, because I knew I couldn't do it. I knew I could do it was holding on by my fingernails to it, but I didn't want that. I wanted to learn to live with ease and, you know, with my insides and outsides matching.
Oh, yeah. And when you get to that point, it is incredible. I mean, I just was posting on my social media this morning about that, just feeling like you're living authentically. And it's such a cliched word, so authentic. But when you actually live it and feel it, it's so powerful. But, hey, I just wanted to, before we go on, because I do want to talk more about that collective and not feeling alone and how powerful that is, because that's basically what, you know, that's their kaupapa, our ethos of living sober. That's what we're all about. I just want to go back to what you said about the most accelerated growth happening in the first 18 months, because I can remember talking to you when I was about 3 or maybe 4 years sober, and it was my soberversary and I was celebrating, and I said to you, oh God, last year was the most revealing yet. And you just looked at me and said, that's the way it goes, Lotta. And it's true. Every year, milestone, I look back and I go, gosh, that last year, you think you've learned it all, but that last year, whoa, that was the real teacher. So we often say to people on our site, because most of our members are in those early, really early crunchy stages, and they are in that period of huge growth, but also learning how to re-parent themselves maybe, or deal with emotions, or just deal with cravings, or deal with socializing, everything, you know, deal with the world telling us to drink and all of what's going on. And we just say to them all the time, just hold on, hold on, hold on. Promise you, it changes and it gets easier, but you've just got to get through this early phase, because it's really hard, isn't it?
Oh, that's right. So I would say, you know, hold on to your seat, because it's an exciting ride, and you know, more will be revealed. And keeping it in the day, I found that really, really helpful. Just I learned, someone wise taught me early on, or that as long as I don't pick up today, no matter what else happens, it's been a successful day. And I found that really, really helpful, because by the time I got into recovery, nothing I did was enough. It wasn't good enough. And I was totally convinced that I was a deeply flawed human being, and that if you knew that about me, then, you know, end the sentence yourself. But I think basically, if you knew that about me, you wouldn't love me. I mean, we all want to be loved, right? And so, you know, hence the double life, the sort of trying to sound and look like everything's okay on the inside, while I'm on the outside, while on the inside believing that I'm unworthy of love.
That's the core of it. If you feel like that, how are you going to allow, or at least, you know, let in anyone else feeling like that about you, if you don't genuinely feel that about yourself? And that's what goes on. That's what you're forced into doing when you put down alcohol and other drugs, is having that connection with yourself.
That's right, via other people. And so I, the first thing that I noted as a success was, as long as I don't pick up today, no matter what else happens, I've had a successful day. And I love that languaging around successful day. I'd never had a successful day in my life, I don't think. No matter what I'd been doing, it wouldn't have been enough. It wouldn't have been good enough. You might think it was enough, but I knew it wasn't, that kind of thing. So living with that very unfriendly relationship with myself, and recovery for me has been about becoming, this is another cliche, but it doesn't matter. Clichés are there for a reason. You know, I was going to say becoming my own best friend. And by that, I mean developing a really friendly, easy, forgiving and compassionate relationship with myself.
But was that hard, Susie? I mean, come on. Well, when you go from that place of not liking yourself, trusting yourself, respecting yourself, it takes time, right? It doesn't just happen overnight.
It takes time, yeah. It takes time. It takes time, absolutely right. Was it hard? The thing about, there's some transferable skills, right? To keep a habit going, you've got to be creative, resourceful and determined, among other things. That resourcefulness, that creativity and that determination can transfer over into recovery. And if I even put, and I don't know where I got this from, I thought if I even, and I was exhausted, you know what I'm talking about, right? Just keeping my head above water until I couldn't. I thought if I can transfer even 10% of the energy I put into the drinking and keeping it a secret and living with myself and pretending to be okay into recovery and being out about it and saying to people, I can't do this, it's too hard. And they say, yes, you can. All you've got to do is do it today. And then, you know, slowly, slowly, things begin to turn around.
They do.
You know, just, yeah, replacing. I mean, I am a creature of habit. I love routines and rituals. I've had it.
I know you do.
I've been reading the same daily reading book for 35 years. It's one of them's fallen apart and the other one's starting to look like that too. And I love that because I think, oh, you know, this is what I do now. I wake up in the morning and I make a decision no matter what happens today, I'm not going to pick up. I still do that because I can and I love that. And in that moment, I've, you know, making a decision is very powerful. So year after day in, day out, week in, month out, year in, year out, making that decision that no matter what happens today, I'm, you know, I'm having a, if I don't pick up, I'm having a successful day. So what happens then is it's not like you have to actually go out, although there's lots of things to do as they pop up, but self-esteem begins naturally to grow. As the days go by, self-esteem grows. And that it's like as that behavior reduces, the other stuff grows like a garden, really.
But some days are hard. I mean, days are so hard. We lose people we love, you know, or we lose jobs or we get hurt. Like, you know, it is so simple. Just for today, I'm not going to pick up. I'm not going to have a drink. But then we have to acknowledge some of those days are going to suck.
Oh, they're totally suck.
Some of those days are going to suck. And you might feel really uncomfortable all day. But you're right. It's that thing of like, even if you go to bed and you've been grumpy or you've felt bad, that's because I always felt like there was something wrong.
Yeah.
I always felt there was something wrong if I'd had a bad day. Oh, this is wrong. You know, this is wrong. It's wrong, and then I'd go to bed and I think that was wrong, and now I know actually, but that's just what it is. But that feeling of it being wrong, and it's hard to kind of marry with that success of, but you didn't drink.
That's right, yeah. The thing is, and I know that wrongness thing too, and I mean, I'm a parent. I had two kids. I still have two kids. One daughter was 6 and the other was 14, and we all had to learn how to live a life with someone who's learning how to live without using alcohol and other drugs. Now, their life had been very unconventional up to that point. And, you know, it's tough being a parent anyway. I've yet to meet a parent who doesn't feel guilty about something they've done or not done. Well, I knew so many things that I had done, and the neglect and the stuff around my kids. It's my greatest regret. I don't lose sleep over it, but you know, sometimes people say they've got no regrets. I do regret. That's my regret about the neglect my kids went through during those years of active addiction for me. And some days, yes, it's all wrong, no matter
what. So what do you do about that regret? Because that does come up on our site as well, that people say, how do I move past this shame or guilt I have for this very concrete thing that happened or I did or whatever? Like, how do you learn where to put that and what to do with it?
Yeah, well, you see, there's no sort of simple answer to that. But because I'm in a 12-step program, you know, I've written and shared and practiced the steps for years. And with that regret, I mean, there's a couple of things that happen, you know, like, I mean, it's in there, and some of my friends know this, and I'm saying it out here because you all know what I'm talking about, right? Everyone who's been a parent. I do have to have some compassion for myself. I've made amends, you know, to the kids, the adults now with children of their own, and along the way, What I had to do or what I felt like I needed to do was really support them, because, you know, with addiction, as you know, no matter what the substance, it negatively impacts on families, and recovery positively impacts on families. And that positive impact is not an easy ride. That's what I mean. Hold on to your seat and strap it in, because you don't know where you're going to go with this. And so making a point of being there for the kids today. And in recent years, I did this, I said to my, something must have come up, and I was talking to my daughter, my youngest daughter, and about something, and it must have been my something about what happened in the past. And she said, "Mum, it's okay. I'm okay with that. Just be a really good grandmother."
Oh, I love that. And let it be said also that your daughters also do amazing work now and give back based on what they went through and experienced and learned. And so they're now also equally as valuable members of society with that lived experience. So
that's right.
we can't ignore the perhaps negatives or downsides, but we can also focus on the positives. And, you know, that's what they say. There's research, as we know, that says that, you know, people in recovery are some of our most valuable members of society, because they do give back and they want to help. And they've had to go through that grittiness and to become who they are. And I mean, that's, I love that, because it flies in the face of all that shame and stigma that we felt. And it's like, actually, I'm not ashamed that I'm in recovery, because, you know, it makes me a really valuable person, and I've turned my life around.
Yeah, well, there's that David Best. There's a guy called David Best. He does research, and he says, you know, for people who are in recovery, you know, and they've got, they get to their 5 years or more, and they've done that research, they're weller than well, as it were. And in fact, people in that considered long-term recovery do more service in the community, they'd be your ideal neighbors, that kind of thing. And I love that. I love that affirmation from the you know, from the, what's the word I'm looking for, just, you know, we know it, right? As a recovery group, we know that things change, we know that we get better, we know that we move from self-obsession into supporting other people, we know all of that. But to get that acknowledgement from the establishment, I love that. But just in terms of that regret, like just in practical terms, because every now and then I could be driving the car, it just, you know, it comes up and I go, I can feel it in my heart, you know, something that I've remembered. I might have driven past a house here in Auckland or something. Anyway, the memory pops up and I can feel it in my body. And I just say, it's, you know, oh, Amy or Alyssa, you know, oh, God, I'm so sorry. And I say, it's okay, Suze, this is okay. And I, you know, really speak to myself in that way, you know, because the, like you said about reparenting, we do have to become our own.
Yeah.
Parent, right?
I love that compassion as well. That self-compassion.
We need to become our own nurturing parent, which some days, of course, is easier than others. And as time goes by, it gets easier and easier. But at the very beginning, the thought of having compassion for myself, I wanted you to think that I had that going on, you know, the people, but on the inside, my inside still didn't match my outsides, you know, because I still felt, like you were saying, I did feel wrong on the inside. But what I did do, because what I learned, right, we cannot think our way into mental health. We've got to take some actions. So yeah. I did that, you know, not picking up every day, beginning to do some service and, you know, just learning how to be a mum and fronting up, and learning how to be a partner and fronting up, and that kind of thing. And slowly, slowly, things change. They just do. I lost track of my thought there.
I just wanted to pick up on the service thing, because I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in the 12-step model, being of service is things like helping out at meetings and, you know, I don't know, being a sponsor. I don't know, whatever the official way of being of service in the 12-step is. At Living Sober, we have our own version of that giving back, being of service thing, which is all about commenting and supporting other members. And so I often watch people, they'll join and they might lurk for a while and then they'll start writing their own updates. And there's always that turning point where they start welcoming in new members, because we get a little notification, and then they start commenting and lifting up and supporting other members. And that's when they're taking what, you know, they're doing, their recovery and what the site offers to a new level, because that in turn lifts us up and makes us feel good about ourselves, right?
That's right. And it's wonderful. I love that. And it's exactly how it works, because that's what we're doing. We're uffying other people and we're giving back what was so freely given to us. So it continues. There's an energy, right? We're just sharing the love, basically.
Yeah.
You know, we're not trying to fix anyone. We're just saying, hey, it's so great to see you. And, you know, thumbs up and those lovely warm words. Because, you know, when people come in the door, as you know, we're still so full of guilt and shame, and self-judgment is really, really full on.
And having and fear, that, a lot of fear.
The fear.
You know, because the fear of actually stopping.
Oh, it's terrifying, isn't it? And what are you going to do with all your time?
What are you going to do? I mean, you know, it's like, who does that? You know, when, especially with alcohol, this drug, which is so normalized, glorified, and it's everywhere. You know, I often talk about, at the point where I was about to quit, I felt like I was standing on the edge of a cliff looking into this black abyss and of nothingness. The fun is going to stop.
Yeah,
I'm going to be boring, Lotta. No one's going to want to hang out with me. Oh, my gosh. You know, and I was already projecting into the future these events, you know, like my children's weddings. They were 5 and 3 at the time, and I was already at their imaginary wedding in the future, miserable because I couldn't drink. That was the hold I had on it. And I was it had on me, I should say. And it was like I was standing on the edge of this cliff looking into this blackness and jumped.
Oh, I know.
That's why we're all legends, because we jump and we go, for whatever reason, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Oh, it's amazing, that emotional bungee jump. And that's exactly what it is. And, you know, that thing, oh, my God, oh, you know, what am I going to do at so-and-so's 21st when everyone's drinking and having a fabulous time and I'll be the wowser in the corner and I can't even celebrate my own son's 21st and all that stuff, and all that stuff lives in the future. That's why it's so great to just bring it back to the day and, you know, what's happening today. It takes all the feeling, because, of course, when we're having those thoughts, we're also having the feelings around, you know, I'm sad in the corner while everyone's, you know, having a wonderful time.
Yeah.
And, you know, with alcohol, it's an interesting drug because it's legal, and because it's even more than legal, because it's so, well, it's the only drug we have to justify not using.
Oh, I know. It's crazy.
Come on. Yeah.
Why aren't you drinking? Like, what?
Would they say that about anything else?
Why aren't you doing heroin?
Yeah,
come on,
have a line of speed, you know, like, just come on, loosen up, just have one. Not that I, you know, and my experience has been amazing really around that, because people haven't pushed alcohol on me. In fact, I had a revelation when I was a few months in recovery, and I had another friend who got into recovery around about the same time as me, and we were, you know, we had a sort of similar social scene, and it was a special friend's birthday or some kind of celebration. And anyway, we decided we'd go together, and we made the plan, and we thought, okay, we'll go, we'll have an exit strategy, and we'll just be together, and if it's too much, we'll just go, you know, the kinds of things that you do to keep safe. And just anyway, what I thought was, well, I said, oh, you know, everyone's going to be so out of it on alcohol and weed. Well, it turns out they weren't. It was me and one other guy here. The rest of them were just having a really good time and just taking it or leaving it. And I thought,
that's one of the amazing things, isn't it? You start realizing that not everyone's boozing like you do. And can I also just say, I have had some of the best times at parties sober, dancing all night, chatting, the little quiet little chats that you might have off to the side right at the end of the night with someone else who's not wasted, by the way. And you know, those lovely memorable moments. Some parties are terrible, some parties aren't fun, they're not your gang of people, you're not in the right mood, your clothes don't fit, you just, it doesn't work. And but don't go home and think that's just because you weren't drinking. That just wasn't your party. It's not about the liquid. We give it all the power to this imaginary glass of liquid, and it's not about that. It's about all these other factors that are inherent.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, some parties just aren't for us, whether we were drinking or not.
Oh, so great chatting to you, Susie, and I just really appreciate all that you do for me and my work here at Living Sober and the other stuff that we do together. We facilitate workshops on addiction together, which is always a joy, and
yeah,
35 years, how amazing. I mean, I can't even, there'll be people watching this who can't even imagine getting to that place. And what do you want to say to them? Final words, Susie.
Well, what I was going to say, like anyone who is watching, it's so wonderful that you're here, no matter what got you here, if you're just checking it out or if you're in recovery a few days, a few weeks, a few months or a few years, you know, just keep coming back. And living sober is a joy, and it's something that is so accessible to so many people, and that kindness and compassion and warmth and connection, that's what it's all about. That is the opposite of addiction. That's the opposite of the loneliness and the fear and the shame and the guilt and the, all of that stuff, anxiety that, you know, I know I lived with as a child, actually, and, you know, it wasn't soothed until I picked up that first drink, and then that worked well for a while, and then it didn't, and then it compounded all that and compounded all that and became terrifying, and now we're here together, you're not on your own, you know, we don't have to do this stuff on our own, and it is only love that heals, and that's a loving action. Every day you don't pick up isn't loving action towards you and others. And if you do pick up, that's okay. You can just start again. We can begin anew.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. That's a lovely note to end on. Much love to you, Susie.
Yeah, bye. Love to everyone. Thanks, Lotta. Thanks for all you do.
See ya.